My name is Ian Abernathy. I'm interviewing Pam Hoyt at my residence. We're going to talk about her experiences in life and probably focus mainly on the military. Okay, Pam, you were born in Michigan, right?
Yes.
And you've lived all over the world.
Basically. Yeah.
You were also the first girl to play softball, Little League softball, in your town in Michigan. Did you have anything you wanted to say about that?
Well, I guess I was about fourth or fifth grade when I played Little League, tried out for the team, and my father had to go before the town to allow women or girls to try out for the team, and they gave me the same opportunity to try out, which I did make a team, and I did play for the time that we lived in Michigan, but you could see there were a lot of fathers who had brought their sons to try out that were not happy about that. Either because I took their place or the fact that I had broken a tradition of just men playing or boys playing that game. But they let me play, and I was glad because I believe you have to have opportunities for anybody.
Mm-hmm. And you did well, and you continued in many sports, right?
Yes. I played Babe Ruth, which is the senior Little League, when I went to high school. Just prior to high school and in high school, I played through to my sophomore year, and maybe they let you play because you're a little bit more coordinated than most boys at that age. But I played first base and sometimes third, but primarily first base, because boys hadn't quite grown yet, and I had reached my maximum height, and I seemed to be able to stretch a little farther than they could. But I also played ice hockey, played on a boys' team when I was younger, living in Boston. Played with a community team and went on later, because we lived down south, so I didn't play it there, but once I moved back up north, I continued playing ice hockey, and I played in college for 4 years, varsity ice hockey as a goalie. So I've always been athletic. From running to baseball to ice hockey, and also ski team. Did that in high school. But athletics has always been one of my loves. Not any particular sport, I guess. I competed in racing longer than any sports, running. And that was a time when there weren't very many women in running either. Like when I first started out in the 70s, it was unusual to have really four or five females show up to race. And you're really then competing against males.
Did you learn, what did athletics teach you, or anything? Did they teach you anything?
Well, it teaches you, especially playing on a sport, an actual team, it teaches you camaraderie with the other people, but also how to work together, how to be a teamship almost. And especially for a female, where a lot of women don't learn how to participate in that kind of group, because women don't play, I don't think, team sports as much as men do. And especially playing on a team where it's co-ed, I think you learn to work with somebody from a boy or a girl at a young age, which is helpful for later in life. I think it's helped me in my military career in dealing with men, because I've dealt with the opposite sex in competitive situations as well as in friendship, so that I have a better outlook, I guess, towards males. That I look at them as they can be your friend, they can be a competitor, as well as somebody that you date.
Is that one of the most important things you've learned in life in general? Or?
I think in general, it's probably the most important thing you learn is being flexible. And kind of, you have to be flexible no matter what you do, because if you're not, then yeah, unfortunately you get frustrated at times. But I think playing sports and just, because you reach, when I tried out for the boys teams, you have to be flexible, because you got to understand that you're in something that women haven't been able to play before, or a lot of girls into, and you can't demand everything all at once, so you have to be flexible. It's a give and take situation, and business, I think that prepares you well for the business world, and learning how to give and take, because everything can't go your way. You learn how to compromise. So I'd say flexibility is probably one of the most important lessons I've learned in my life.
That's would definitely be a bonus in the military.
Yes.
One minute you have to take command, and the next minute you have to give one.
Yes, you have to. I think it's very important in terms of flexibility, especially as a leader, which is what I am. You have to not only be able to give orders, but you have to be able to take orders in the same manner that you'd want someone to take your orders. And I think a good leader is also a good follower. And it's the same way when you play a sport. You learn to do both, because you have to in order for it to be successful.
Is that your philosophy for leadership?
Yes, it's one of my philosophies. That and allowing people the opportunity to show themselves, to be creative and not stifle that creativity. You see leaders who feel that they have to have everything under their control, rather than being able to lead through different avenues by allowing people to do their own thing and be creative. So I like to be that kind of leader, more of a participant type leadership as opposed to a authoritarian.
And that probably makes the leadership job a little easier too.
It makes it more fun, because everybody's having a good time besides just me.
You don't have to worry about backstabbing, I guess, as much. You don't have to worry about people not following what you say. If they realize what they say is going to be important, too.
Yes, I think if you do a participant-type leadership, now it doesn't always work, but in a peacetime army it does, because you have that time in which you can do that. That time's not the factor. If time were the factor, then you'd have to use a different type of leadership style. But I think when you do that kind where you allow people to have input, they feel ownership to that idea and take it more personal. And that's really what you want to do. And when you allow people to do that, then they're willing to do anything to make sure that it gets resolved, or the action gets completed. And that's a lot more satisfying, not only for the leader who initiated it, but for the individual that's completed that task. They feel like they've done something.
Mm-hmm. I realize you've never led a group into combat, but do you have any philosophies or something you've worked up about what you would do in that situation, or how you should run that situation?
Well, actually, as a leader, you're also a trainer, and I've trained really all 9 years of my military career on active duty as an officer, and what I've done is trying, you've got to know your job. That's probably the most important thing for a leader, going to combat or being in a peacetime army. If you know your skills and you're confident in what you're doing, people will follow you and listen to what you're doing. And I've sent people to combat, and I've sent many officers, and I've sent many soldiers that I've trained for that last, the last one, and actually for Just Cause in Panama. I sent many military police there that I had personally trained. And I think they were successful there, so I believe that we as a team, had we gone together, would have been successful. Because in combat, just like in a management type teamwork scenario, if the team's got to work together to do well, yes, there has to be one person coming up with the ideas, but I think as a team we work well, but you have to train as a team. And that's always been, the history I've read, one of the biggest downfalls we've ever had in any war is people we send who are not trained as a team. They're thrown in there and expected to be able to do their job, and they can't. So I guess my philosophy is train in peacetime, same way you're going to train the way you're going to fight in war.
When you said the last one, you meant the Gulf War with Iraq. Did you have any feelings about that? I'm sure you had some kind of feelings about it. Were you thinking? Were you thinking what would happen if you were sent over there, or with your family? What would happen while you were over there?
We had prepared because if the President of the United States had actually mobilized, we didn't actually mobilize. We mobilized the reserves and the National Guard and the inactive ready reserve. The President mobilized them to go to war because they came to Fort McClellan, those who were going to do military police functions, and we retrained them. And then we sent them to the Gulf War. But I was prepared because we knew if we were mobilized, that if it continued longer, the reserves would come in and displace us at Fort McClellan, and then we would move to the Gulf and be assigned to units. And you always have to be ready. We had our wills updated. You have your insurance updated, make sure it's correct. You make sure you've given your spouse the power of attorney to handle everything, because you have a joint. It's simple things like you have a joint bank account. As simple as something as that. He can't draw funds or do things. If he had to move, do major moves or anything, he wouldn't be able to do it without my signature. So we made sure that he could do anything as if I were there. And you try to make it as least inconvenient to your family with your removal as possible. And it was interesting because not only did men deploy, but women deployed. And for myself, I didn't think anything of it as a female deploying. I thought of myself as a soldier first as deploying, not as a female. And we saw that females did very well in the war. Now, one of the things that sometimes gets out of proportion is the fact when a female does her job and she does it well, people think that's just abnormal, that it's a feat that they've never seen before, when actually she may not be any better than the male that she's with. But because she's a female and did it well, it's like a miracle of some type. Some light has shined through. But I think that one of the things that the Gulf War definitely showed us was the fact that people, soldiers trained, can do their job, and they do it well in today's Army. And that it didn't matter whether you were a male or a female, because today's modern technology, it's really your intelligence combined with your physical capabilities. Really, warfare, for the most part, unless you're in the infantry, doesn't require a lot of physical strength. It requires endurance. How long can you actually stay awake?
Which you got from running out here.
Yes, and I think women have good stamina. I think they do. Probably a little bit more. There's been studies, you know, which one has better endurance. And a female can make it through childbearing, you figure it has to have a lot of endurance. I don't think there's a single male would volunteer to go through that kind of thing. So I think women are very capable of enduring the kind of physical hardship and tests that the military will put on them in terms of combat. But like I said, a lot of it too is intelligence. Programming computers to fire missiles to the battleships in the air with our helicopters and jets. And that doesn't take any muscle. That takes intelligence and quickness. And females just as quick as any male if trained properly.
So talking about childbirth, you have three children.
Yes.
And two of the twins. And through then, and still, you find endurance in dealing with them.
You have to. I kind of have to look at it as the endurance I would have for soldiers when I trained them, when I had a 220 soldier company, and my endurance with that. And the kids teach you patience. You've got to use the same patience that you use with your soldiers that you use with your own children if you want to make them good citizens. And being a mother isn't in some ways it isn't too different from being a company commander. You have to care for your people. You have to train them to be good at what they want to be good at, what they've signed up to be trained for. And your children the same way. You want them to be good at certain tasks. You have to care for them in almost the same manner, same caring manner that you would for your own soldiers. But you've always got this reality too that someday you got to let go of your children, whether your soldiers or your actual ones that are in your house. But and you may have to lead them someday to combat. So you have a different attachment, I guess. But my boys certainly have taught me patience. Especially all under the age of six.